Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson for Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talk to Melissa Aldenut, the Manager of Policy Planning and Urban Design at the City of Guelph. In our ongoing quest to better understand the hows and whys of development in the Royal City, it makes sense to start with the document from which all development decisions flow, the official plan. Melissa Aldenut is the person who will guide us on this quest to understand the official plan, why it exists, how it works, and what it takes to change it. Planning for a whole city now and in the future is the topic of this edition of the Guelph Politicast. Now, you've probably heard about the official plan before because it's kind of a big deal. Every municipality in the province has to have one, and it has to meet the particular and specific needs for the city, town, or village it covers. And it has to be holistic because it doesn't just have to meet the immediate growth needs of the municipality, but it has to look 20 years ahead. Every single planning decision made in the council chambers has to be in line with the official plan. So it would seem like a good idea to learn a little bit more about it, even as lay people, I would say. The City of Guelph website describes the official plan as focused on sustainability and establishes policies that have a positive effect on Guelph's social, economic, cultural, and natural environment. The official plan strives to maintain a high quality of life for the residents of Guelph, reduce uncertainty concerning future development, and provide a basis for the zoning bylaw and other land use controls. Now, specifically, that means things like urban design, how tall buildings can be and where they can put tall buildings. It also covers methods for sustainability and mitigating climate change, managing the various transportation methods in the city, the kinds of signages that's allowed, the creation of new parkland and trails, even the placement of public art is dealt with in the 403-page official plan. It's been updated 3 times, and there are 3 secondary plans that deal with planning specifics in certain areas of Guelph. And you've been hearing a lot about one of them lately, the Claire Maltby plan. So where can one possibly begin with such an unwieldy beast of a document like the official plan? Well, this week on the Guelph Politicast, we start at the beginning. I ask Melissa Aldenut about why we even need an official plan and a bit about its history. Then we talk about what the plan covers, why it covers it, and how the zoning bylaw comes into play when it comes to developments and proposals brought to the monthly planning meeting. We also talk about how the comprehensive zoning bylaw review might affect the ongoing work keeping the official plan up to date, and what other changes might be pending, also the occasional legal intricacies that result from updating the plan. And in the end, I'll ask this forward-thinking question: will we ever no longer need an official plan? You might know the answer. So I caught up with Melissa Aldenut earlier this week at City Hall. Melissa Aldenut, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Adam.
For people who don't know your position at the City of Guelph, can you just offer what your position is and what that job entails?
Sure. I'm the manager of policy planning and urban design. So my team is responsible for the development of our official plan, for long-range policy planning, urban design, natural heritage policies for protection of our natural environment, our cultural heritage conservation policies, analytics, so we do a lot of data collection and reporting on data. We prepare secondary plans. We're basically involved in the long-range planning of the city.
So I guess to bring it down to the most basic level, and the reason why we're here today, talking about the official plan and the hows and whys and whats. So let's just ask the most basic of questions. Why does the City of Guelph need an official plan?
Okay, so the basic answer is that the province under the Planning Act requires municipalities to have an official plan to set out our land use policies for development for approximately a 20-year time horizon. So our official plan sets out our vision and goals, a policy framework for growth and development in the city to 2031.
And this is kind of like, it was relatively recent that this is, I mean, there was a plan going all the way back to 1827 when John Galt arrived here. There was a plan.
But in terms of being like mandated by the province, this was like 1990, I think, the Planning Act said that the city had to have start thinking like 20 years in advance in terms of planning.
Well, the city has had an official plan going back to the 60s, 50s, 40s. We've had long-range plans for the city development. Our most recent official plan is from 1994, and it has been updated comprehensively two times since then, so in 2001, and then most recently with OPA 48 in 2012.
Mm-hmm. So what does the official plan do? Like, that may be a big question, but let's phrase it this way. In terms of what's the intent of the official plan in terms of how the city manages that growth? You know, what does, you know, you talked about planning out the city or making plans for the city 20 years out, but what are the mechanisms by which the official plan does that?
Okay, so it sets out the vision for growth to 2031. So it talks about how we want to grow, and then it provides policies and land use designations to make that happen. So we have policies related to housing, employment, population. So where and how growth would occur, what types of housing and where that type of housing would be, sets out policies for commercial and industrial employment lands, provides policies for parkland, affordable housing, municipal services, pretty much anything that happens within the city. And then it sets out policies for the protection of our natural environment, so our wetlands and woodlands, and then for the conservation of our cultural heritage resources. So it provides the full range of policies to ensure that we're meeting our growth projections and targets, but that we're doing it in a way that is consistent with council and our community's values.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything the official plan doesn't take into account?
Well, it's basically a land use planning tool, so mm-hmm. it's focused on land use.
Right.
It touches on social and community well-being in terms of how do we provide a community that supports quality of life and improves quality of life, but it doesn't get into things more on the social or human health
right.
level outside of a land use focus.
Right. But speaking of land use, though, like, in the unlikely event someone were to say, you know, we would need a dump in Guelph, like a new landfill or something, that would that be something that... How would the official plan come into play then?
Right.
We're imagining here.
Okay. Basically, it would set out what parameters you would need to study to determine if that land use was appropriate. So mm-hmm. right now in the city, we have the closed landfill, but to
right.
open a new landfill, you'd have to go through a number of environmental studies and requirements to make sure that it was a feasible land use,
mm-hmm.
that it wouldn't be detrimental to our environment or to human health or those kinds of things.
Mm, which would be difficult to pass in the event of a landfill.
Yeah, in a municipality like Guelph, where we're entirely urban,
mm-hmm.
so we're urban to our boundaries. We don't have any rural lands within the city outside of agricultural uses that are sort of a temporary use now that we're an urban municipality and we're planning for urban growth to our boundaries.
So there's a distinction then between, because we might get into Claremolpe later, but that huge section of land is not necessarily agricultural. Some of it was agricultural, but there's a distinction between what's green space and what's agricultural.
Yeah, I mean, with the city of Guelph, because we are an urban municipality, which means that all of our lands within our corporate boundary are designated for urban uses,
mm-hmm.
we have agricultural uses that are ongoing now, but they would be expected to develop into urban uses over the next 20 to 30 years or so.
And urban uses doesn't mean pave everything from one end of the border to the other.
No, especially not in the Guelph context, where we have an extensive natural heritage system that is protected through our policies. So that protects our water resources, wetlands, woodlands, landform with respect to the Periscope Moraine. So we're protecting the landform of the moraine within the southern area of the city. Our river system, all of those natural heritage features are protected through the designations of our official plan, and policies are set out for how development could occur adjacent to, but not within those features.
Mm-hmm. I did want to ask about secondary plans in general, because there's a downtown secondary plan, there's a Guelph Innovation District secondary plan, there's Claire Maltby, which is in development. For my sort of thinking, there's also the fact that we do get occasional updates to the official plan. So what is the difference between having a secondary plan and just doing an amendment to the official plan? Why did we go with one direction over the other depending on the project?
Okay, so secondary plans are basically a more specific land use study for a specific area. Mm-hmm. So we would set out, using the official plan as the base, then we're looking at what does that mean, what do we do for this area? So when we look at the particular features in that area, what goals and objectives we need to achieve. So with the downtown secondary plan, we had direction from the province through places to grow, that we had a certain density target for our downtown that we had to achieve, and a certain population and number of jobs that we needed to achieve within downtown. So how do we achieve that within the Guelph context and maintain the character of our downtown? For the Guelph Innovation District, it was the vision for that area was to be an urban village with a mix of uses to support the residential, but also to be an employment campus. So how do we develop that area to meet those goals? So,
right.
And when we're looking at Claire Maltby, we're looking at that area. So how do we apply our official plan vision and policies to that specific area, knowing that it has a significant amount of natural heritage features, that we have population and employment targets to meet citywide? So how do we make that happen in this area? What's the right type of development on more of a smaller geographic area?
So the difference is specificity.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What kind of scenario do prompts like an amendment? There's like the wholesale updates every so often, but there are times when an amendment is brought forward too. So what, you know, when do you know it's a good time to amend, or what are the circumstances that there's an amendment?
Okay, so there's a couple different ways amendments can come forward. Some are city initiated, and some are developer or landowner initiated. So for a city initiated amendment, it's generally that there's been an issue identified in the community. So right now we're going through our commercial policy review. So after our official plan update was completed, we recognized that the commercial environment is changing and that our policies needed to have a study done just of that to determine, do our policies work for the future? Are we meeting the trends that are happening in the community? What do we need to do? So then the city goes and does a study for whatever that issue is, and brings forward proposed amendments to council for approval to update our official plans in different ways. For developer or landowner initiated amendments, it's often that they're looking at development in an area where we haven't done a recent update, or the development proposal has something to it that doesn't quite fit with what the official plan policies were. So when we're looking at the official plan, it sets out a general land use planning framework. So when you get into an actual development application, it may not fit quite perfectly.
Right.
So they could be looking for an amendment. In recent years, while we were going through our OP update, we were seeing a few more amendments than normal, I would say, but that's because they were trying to align with our new official plan while we were going through the process of updating it. So they were trying to get sort of in line with us, but our timing was off. So we might see some of those amendments come forward.
Right. Part of this too is, and I've seen this at the planning meetings, is that in areas in the southern end of the city where they used to be technically the part of the township of Puntsledge, or, you know, weren't here, you know, from the beginning of Guelph, but, you know, they still have their original planning from the township, their original zoning designation and land use. That doesn't get, not to put more work on your plate, but, you know, when the city takes over those portions of land, that doesn't get incorporated into, I guess what I'm asking is, you don't look at the planning use then and see how it fits into the city's plan. It's sort of like, I guess it also depends on who owns the land as well. That there's a mixture of things here, right? It's the private landowner, the city's plan, what it was labeled when it was part of the township of Puntsledge or wherever, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so in some cases, we have the official plan has been updated, mm-hmm. but the zoning bylaw hasn't been updated yet to align with the official plan. So we're currently doing the comprehensive zoning bylaw review, mm-hmm. and that's primarily to ensure that our zoning categories line up with our land use designation. So that if you're designated for medium density residential, that your zoning category would permit townhouses and apartments so that you're aligned. Mm-hmm. In some cases, our official plan is looking at, we have some older industrial sites in the older built up area of the city that are designated for residential uses. We expect those industrial uses to sort of over time, they would evolve into a residential use, which would be more compatible with the area.
Right.
But the zoning hasn't been caught up yet. So through the comprehensive review, that's where we look at, okay, so we've designated it this way. This is what we expect for long term. So then we now need zoning regulations and categories to align with that.
It sounds like a chicken and the egg thing. You know, what comes first, the official plan or the zoning, and what feeds into what?
Yeah, so for us, like, it's sort of a hierarchy. So the official plan comes first. Everything that happens in the city has to conform to the official plan. So whether it's engineering going out and doing servicing for an area or looking at road widenings or environmental assessments, those kinds of things, all works that happen in the city have to conform with the official plan. So where we're out of alignment, they either the project is... needs to come into alignment with the official plan because it has to conform, or we'd be looking at, does the official plan need to be amended? Is there something that is out of date or that could be corrected to allow things to happen? But all council decisions, all work the municipality does, has to conform with the official plan.
Mm-hmm. So how does the bylaw review that's happening right now affect your work?
So the bylaw review that's happening right now is really about that alignment. So it will... ensure that residents of the city know what's going to happen next door to them when they can look at the official plan and it says it's a residential designation and that the zoning matches, so that they mm-hmm. can see, so what are the regulations around that zoning? So is it permitted a 3-story height, a 4-story height? What are the setbacks? Those kinds of things happen through the zoning regulations. So it really just allows for that alignment to happen. And it should... stop a number of zoning bylaw amendment requirements because we're aligned. You may still see some amendments because individual applications are unique. They aren't all the same, so you might have to have amendments just to make it fit.
Right.
Yeah, generally that.
Because I think there is an element of, I guess, curiosity for me in terms of, I mean, what it sounds like to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the official plan is this big, broad thing that sort of governs overall direction. And bylaw, the bylaws part of this is sort of the more specific portions that, you know, in the neighborhood that, you know, one section can be residential, but residential can mean all sorts of things. It could mean single detached homes. It could mean apartment buildings. But if I own a plot of land and it sits in the middle of, you know, a neighborhood of single detached homes, and I want to put up, say, 3 townhouses, that's where bylaw comes into play.
Yeah, generally. I mean, the official plan sets out the policies, and then the zoning bylaw basically sets out the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So the zoning bylaw is where you get the legal regulations, what you absolutely have to adhere to. If your setback is 3 meters, but you only have 2 meters, then you're going to have to ask for a variance. Like, you have to get permission to do those kinds of things. So, yeah, official plan is policy, zoning is regulations, and sets out the rules.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get confused? Does it get complicated for you?
Not so much for me. I've been doing this a long time, but yeah, I mean, the hierarchy is there. It's something that we strive to educate the public about, is that when we're coming out to talk about the official plan, that's the time to come and talk with us, because we're setting out the broad vision. So when we set out land use designations throughout the city, so for example, the Gordon Street corridor through the official plan update was changed and put into high density residential and medium density residential categories.
Mm-hmm.
At that time is when we're talking about the vision. So if it's designated for high density, you're going to expect an apartment there.
Right.
So it's... if you want to help set the direction of the city, it's at the official plan level.
What's interesting, though, is I'm not sure people's brains work that way, because people don't tend to think about this until something is going up across the street from them that they don't like, even though it may be perfectly permissible in the official plan. But, you know, as I said, there's a big difference between a single detached family house and a three-story apartment building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true. Like, people, I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into planning a city, and it takes years. So when we start a review, we're doing background studies, we're out doing consultation on studies that feed into the official plan, and then we're consulting on the whole official plan. So it's years of work that goes into the development of an official plan to set out that course for the next 20 years of growth and development in the city. So people may come in at different points, and then for us, it's an education aspect. So it's really about ensuring people know what the official plan says for their area, that they understand that this isn't necessarily going to happen tomorrow, that we're setting out goals and objectives for a 20-year time horizon. So your neighborhood may be stable for now, but change could be coming. That it's not necessarily happening right now. So
there was a piece I picked up on when I was looking through the official plan, and it was point 19, or in the beginning, where it says to promote an informed public involvement and education in a user-friendly planning and development process. And I'm curious, because I do see some of the reaction at city council meetings where it seems like the process isn't terribly user-friendly, at least so far as people in neighborhood areas who suddenly realize a 10-story apartment building is going up on the corner. Is the system as user-friendly as aspirationally stated in the official plan, do you think?
I think when you get into individual development applications, there's always room for improvement. We follow what the Planning Act sets out in terms of applications. So when someone applies for an official plan or a zoning bylaw amendment, there's a requirement that they're circulated a notice that we received a complete application. Then they'll get a notice of a public meeting. So that's their chance to hear about the application for the first time when it's presented to council. They can delegate to council and express their viewpoints. And then they'll get a notice of when it's coming back for a decision.
Right.
So that process it's a formal process. And for some people, it's not, I wouldn't suggest that it's user-friendly, because it's not a way that they're used to interacting.
Right.
So to come to council and that it's quite formal, that it's, you know, the mayor is the chair and you have to follow the procedures of the meeting. It's not as user-friendly as it could be. We have looked...
it might be the first time you talk to the mayor, for that matter.
That's right. You've never had an interaction with the city before. Yeah. This is the first time. It's like you get this notice in the mail, and it's like, oh, what's happening? We do encourage the developers to get out and have conversations with the community. So whether they hold a community meeting or however they want to reach out. But we are... in that process, because it's sort of set out by the Planning Act and it is a formal process we have to follow. In terms of the work that we do for studies and updating the official plan and the work we're doing on the comprehensive zoning bylaw right now, we do look at different ways to involve the community and different ways to interact with them. So we offer in-person open houses workshops. So if you want to come and sit down with us for 3 hours and go through a formal workshop, we offer those types of opportunities. We also offer, you can sit at home and you can get online and go through a survey and provide your input that way. You can set up individual meetings with us and come in and talk. We're always open to talking to anyone in the community about any of the projects that we're working on. So we look at different and varied ways to get people involved, and recognizing the fact that not everyone has the time to spend two or 3 hours in a full workshop. So we might do different types of open houses where you can drop in and ask your questions one-on-one, and we combine that with a formal presentation. So if you want to stay and hear all about it, but you only want to talk to us for 5 minutes, you have that opportunity as well.
I guess what I'm wondering is, there's the formal meeting structure, the formal way that these developments come forward, and that has worked. But just from my observational perch, when people come to that statutory meeting, it's always with the phrase of, this whole concept has been dropped on me or dropped on my neighborhood or my neighborhood group. And when we have so many tall buildings going up now, and you know, you can stand on the other side of Gordon Hill, look towards downtown and see mm-hmm. buildings, and you can almost make an argument that, you know, that's affecting me, seeing these tall buildings standing above the tree, and I don't live within 250 meters of that development. Mm-hmm. So I think people are maybe feeling left out of the process.
Yeah, yes. So, I mean, the direct mail goes to people, immediate neighbors.
Yeah.
And we do reach out through notices in the newspaper
mm-hmm.
to the broader public, and then there's signs on properties and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
When we're looking at the overall planning, so when we're studying the official plan and the land use designations and looking at that long-range land use, like what the city will be, that's where we do the community-wide consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's harder to reach people because it has to be something that they're interested in for them
right.
to come forward. And maybe they're not interested until they see the crane and they're like, oh, what's happening
yeah.
downtown? Why is there an 18-story building?
Yeah, and by then it's too
yeah.
late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about the legal side of this, and this may not be in your department exactly, but one of the things that it seems to me is that there's been a, I don't want to say a tradition, but I'll say a tradition of legal appeals, and that goes to the OMB, and they now go to the Local Planning Appeal Tribunal, mm-hmm. LPAT. And that seems to go for just about any change to the official plan. Is this just, and maybe that's changed with the LPAT and the changes to that regulatory body, but what, you know, it seems like it's pro forma. A city passes an official plan amendment and we go to OMB or LPAT and challenge it. Am I wrong about that?
It is something that people have a right to do,
right.
is to appeal a decision of our council. In most cases, especially through our official plan amendment, when we did the update to the official plan, we had mm. a number of appeals to the plan that we were able to resolve through mediated settlements. So we could work through the issues after the fact. So sometimes there's a feeling that the way council approved something didn't address everyone or a certain person's or group's issues specifically mm. as we were going through that process. But having time after the fact through the formal appeals process where you sit down and you hash out through the issues, you can
mm-hmm.
come to an agreed upon settlement that results in something that the city is supportive of and improves mm. our plan in the end. So for the official plan in particular, the appeals are often more a matter of issues weren't able to be satisfied prior to a council decision for that person who appealed.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to get through those through settlements as opposed to a contested hearing.
Right.
When it gets into individual development applications, because there's more, especially for neighbors, there's more of a personal response to that application and to that decision, the
mm-hmm.
the appeal process allows them to work through their individual issues.
Right.
So I think it can be a lengthy and uses a lot of resources to get through those appeal processes. It
yeah.
does end up in either upholding where the city got to a recommendation on something, or it
right.
ends up improving a development in response to issues. So the appeals process to me is it's a valuable process for the community in terms of checks and balances, whether it's for us as a city to improve upon what we had recommended or what a developer had brought forward in a decision. And we've usually ended up with really good results for the city.
It's me kind of speaking as a layperson, but there is that appeals process. But the plan, again, the plan covers the whole city,
mm-hmm.
and nobody has land interests all over the city, right? Most people are talking about specific areas. Like, again, to use Claire Maltby as an example, that's not one developer that owns all that land. There are
mm-hmm.
multiple developers or multiple landowners. People aren't necessarily developers. Or like the Marco Longo farm, for example. But you know, there's also a process where you can come to council, you can file an amendment, and council hears that specific amendment. So I guess I'm wondering, what's the virtue of appealing the whole thing when maybe your interest is in one area? Because again, it's a matter of the whole city versus your specific interest as a landowner or developer.
Yeah, so the changes to the appeals process through the Planning Act, so now that we have the Local Planning Appeals Tribunal, there's no longer the ability to appeal an entire plan.
Okay.
They have to, when they file their appeal, they have to file it with their specific issue. So they can't just say it doesn't conform with the official plan, or it doesn't conform with the provincial policy statement or something. They can't do broad appeals anymore.
Okay.
So the process has changed, and it has narrowed it down. We're still in the early stages of it. The city has only had a couple appeals to the Local Planning Appeals Tribunal that we've been dealing with, and because of the backlog at the Appeals Tribunal, we haven't had that many hearings or events with the tribunal yet. But the process has been narrowed down, so we don't get those broad sweeping appeals that can take months to work through to say, okay, so what are the issues, and get down to an issues list. Now they have to define that up front.
So they identified that as a problem with the process, because the last amendment for the city of Guelph was passed only officially, went into effect last year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the end of 2017. So it was our official plan update was approved by council in 2012.
Right.
The Ministry of Municipal Affairs is our approval authority, so they approved it in 2013.
Yeah.
And all of the appeals were dealt with, and we had an in force and effect official plan at the end of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So it did, yes, take a number of years to work through issues, to get hearing dates, to settle, and get settlement hearings, and yes, it takes years.
The other way to put that is about a term and a half of city council.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll phrase it this way. What's going on with the official plan right now? We have the bylaw review going on, but what I gather is that this is also an ongoing process for you, and that, you know, obviously, as you said in your job description, you know, your job is heavily involved with the official plan. But in terms of, you know, updates or amendments or what's going on right now?
Mm-hmm. So right now, we're kind of two-headed with the official plan, because we are in implementation, mm-hmm. but we're also gearing up for our next official plan update. So I'll talk about implementation first, because that's where the real work is happening right now, is that we are implementing the policies, mm-hmm. and the way we're going about it this time with this new official plan is through action plans. Mm-hmm. So we're setting out these action plans for different areas, so our urban design action plan, natural heritage action plan, and a cultural heritage action plan. And they're setting out specific priorities for us in terms of implementing the policy. So we've set out a work plan for ourselves as to what are we doing to ensure that the policies we put in the official plan happen on the ground, so that you can see the official plan in action.
Mm-hmm.
So with the Urban Design Action Plan, we've done a number of urban design master plans or concept plans for different areas of the city, so that we can explain what the change is to the community, so what you can expect to see, like what the policies would result in if development were to occur in these areas. We've been doing that kind of work. The Natural Heritage Action Plan was approved by Council last fall,
mm-hmm.
and we're looking at working through our priority actions with respect to the natural environment, so providing guidance materials for developers and for the community so that they understand what it means when you're developing in a community that's groundwater-based, that has a significant amount of land that's in natural heritage system. And then our Cultural Heritage Action Plan is looking at how do we conserve cultural heritage resources. So we have one heritage conservation district designated in the city. So we're looking at what are the priorities for other areas to be designated as districts. How do we conserve our cultural heritage as we grow?
Mm-hmm.
So that's about implementation. So we're really looking at action planning. We want to make sure that we are out and doing the things that we said that we were going to do. So setting out our work plan for the 3 to 5 years.
Before looking to the future, I just wanted to ask, you know, we talked about how there was a lag in terms of when the amendment was passed and when it goes into effect. does that affect your workload? Like, would it have been preferable to, you know, work on the cultural heritage plan back in 2014 or 2015? Or do you take, you know, back when those kind of appeals were common, does that go into effect? It's like, we've passed this now, we're here in 2012, but realistically, we're not going to be doing anything until 2015, 2016.
Well, it just changes the focus of our work plans. So for some people on my team, they were focused on the appeals. And for other people, they were focused on, okay, so we have policies approved by council and by the minister. Yes, they're under appeal, but we can still move forward and start thinking about, especially in terms of urban design, we continue to work on our concept plans. So how do we communicate to the community what we're doing? And then we had other focus. So we had some other studies that we were working on in the interim.
Mm-hmm.
But then on our next stages are the province introduced Places to Grow 2017,
right,
which sets out new targets for growth for the city. The province is reviewing that new plan right now. And once we have the new Places to Grow, we'll be looking at updating our official plan to a 2041 time frame. So planning forward to 2041 with new density and intensification targets. So looking at our greenfield area, what type and form of development would occur there, and then our intensification targets. So how much growth has to be accommodated within the built-up area of our city. And then having a conversation with the community about how that growth should occur. So do we have the heights right? Is the density right? Where does growth happen? What are our growth areas? So we're looking at, right now we have nodes and corridors. We're adding in a new term called strategic growth areas. So where should we be putting our new population and jobs?
What's a strategic growth area? And it almost feels like the whole city is a strategic growth area when you look at places to grow. But in terms of the city context, what's a strategic growth area?
Yeah, so that's the conversation we're going to have with the community, because in the previous version of Places to Grow, the focus was on intensification corridors and on nodes. So we set our intensification corridors and our nodes. So we have four major nodes in the city plus downtown. So if you're looking at, we have one in the north, south, east, and west, and then downtown as our major nodes. And then our intensification corridors, Gordon Street is a prime example, is where we expected higher density growth to occur. So it was designated as an intensification corridor, and then land use designations were put on that corridor to ensure that intensification was focused there and in the right way. The new terms are strategic growth areas. So they could be the same as our intensification corridors and nodes. They could be other areas. Under Places to Grow, we could set specific density targets for those areas. So you would know, like, this area is 100 persons and jobs per hectare, and this one's 150. So we could get into that. But that's the upcoming conversation with the community, is what do we need to change to meet our 2041 population and employment projections?
Is that more work, or is that like just a new way of looking at work you would have been doing anyway?
Well, yes, we would have to update the official plan anyway. It's just it kind of directs the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there ever a point where Guelph gets built out and we don't need an official plan anymore? Is there like an era where there's the city is built, so we don't need an official plan anymore?
No, I would never see that happening. I mean, we have neighbors in the GTA who have obviously, they built to their borders, but there's still growth happening.
Right.
Guelph is a desirable place to live. We have a high quality of life, so we're going to be attractive to employers and to people wanting to live here. So it's just an evolution of the type of development that we're doing. So right now, we still have greenfield areas to develop. So Guelph Innovation District and the Claremalpe area are greenfield areas. When we mature past the greenfield, we'll be into intensification only. So we'll need an official plan to guide how that development would happen.
So you'll be in business for a while.
Yeah, planning I don't think ever ends.
Maybe I'll wrap up by asking one of my little silly questions, but if somebody gives you an address, do you know what that's zoned for, like roughly? Like, are you like that in sync with the official plan?
Maybe an area. It could give you a general idea of whether it's commercial, industrial, employment, or residential. Yes.
You're that good. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for your time today, and we will let you get back to planning.
Great. Thank you.
And once again, that was Melissa Aldenut with the City of Guelph. You can find a link to the official plan at the city's website under the City Government tab, and you can find out more about the Comprehensive Zoning Bylaw Review also under the City Government tab under Bylaws and Policy. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.